After all, I can tell him. She meant her husband. I saved up and bought it second hand. She turned and left the room, but I did not follow her further. I had had enough. I was never over sentimental, but the cold-bloodedness of the woman froze me. There was not one genuine feeling of regret for her old lover among all her thoughts. Her husband, the very man I had wronged, felt more genuine regard for me than she did. This set me visiting my former friends and acquaintances, but I did not obtain much satisfaction from it. For the most part, they dismissed the matter of my death by a formal expression of regret. Some, however, only looked upon it as an excellent opportunity to obtain some pecuniary advantage for themselves. The very men whom I had regarded most as my friends were the ones generally who set to work to rob those who were left dependent on my estate. There were a few exceptions, and often these were the very men upon whose consideration I had the least call. But these kindnesses were few and far between, and I suffered misery unspeakable. I understand that I have never been into hell proper. In fact, there is no doubt of it. But all the same, that period of my existence was a very colorable imitation of it. Then I determined to follow up H, more than half fearing to find her playing the same game as the others. Thank God she wasn't. Had she been, I think I should have followed the promptings of that evil spirit who is always at my shoulder to set to work to be avenged on some of them. Her example kept me from that fatal sin, the punishment for which is, as you know from the officer, hell. Chapter 3, Astral Forests. The Hunters and the Hunted. After a while I began to realize existence on the astral plane much more clearly. I found it was peopled, and had its forests and animal kingdoms, as has the earth. This ushered in a new phase of existence. I had just come away from watching some of M.S. struggles, and was feeling dejected and miserable. Out of nowhere in particular appeared two forms, a man's and a woman's. I knew the latter. I had met the man before on the earth. She poured out a torrent of abuse, and urged the man to go for me. I closed with him, and we battled like two savages, while she tried to attack me from behind. It was soon over. I thrashed him so soundly that he fled away shrieking. Then I turned my attention to her. I did not hesitate, I flogged her. It was in no spirit of revenge, but solely to give her a lesson and compel her to leave me alone in the future. I felt no remorse afterwards and still feel it had to be done. After parting from these two I wandered into a strange forest. The trees were in shape very much like giant mare's tails, and I knew at once this was the astral body of a great forest of the coal measure. At times I was able to get a glimpse of the position on earth which it occupied, faint and fleeting, yet sufficient to let me see that it was situated on what is now the embankment, but though at times I thus saw, as it were, two planes converge and overlap one another, yet the shape of the astral ground and that of the world as you know it did not correspond. These glimpses of two worlds at once were, however, very rare, and usually I was confined to the astral alone. It was strange that this forest should be situated on the embankment where at the present day no coal exists, but I suppose at one time it did exist there. I expected that I should find it was on the northern or Welsh coal fields, but though I do not doubt there are such astral forests in those places, yet the forest I learned to know seemed to correspond with the embankment. This forest was a most dreary place, dark, evil-smelling, full of marshes, and, worst of all, of savage animals of former ages. Again and again these weird creatures appeared and attempted to attack me. Often they pursued me for what seemed like hundreds of miles. On and on I fled and they followed, but they never caught me or approached any nearer than they were when the pursuit began. This was not so strange as it seems, for they willed to hunt me and I willed to fly. My will was not sufficiently strong to compel them to cease hunting me, nor was theirs strong enough to hold me routed to the spot. After a time their interest in me weakened, and they turned their attention in other directions. Then I was able to go on my own way for a time unmolested. J. W. I quite follow you so far, but what would have happened if you had stumbled into the clutches one of those monsters unawares? They could not have killed you, of course, but surely they could cause you pain, just as you caused pain, by exercising your will to that intent, on the man who attacked you? W. A. I was always able to turn, as it were by instinct, when I was nearing some of these animals. None of them had sufficient willpower to compel me to come towards them against my wishes. Now man has developed his willpower to a much greater extent than the animal, and so he can compel them to obey him, and even compel other men to wait and be hurt. Often, two men each wish to hurt the other, as in the case you quoted. Then they will go towards each other, and he who had the strongest will usually prevail. A good man, however, could not be attacked by an evil on the astral plane, for his guardian angel could shield him. I had driven my guardian angel so far away that during my earlier time on the astral plane I had to fend for myself in a large measure. Further, most really spiritual souls remained but very short time on the astral plane, and also souls of very old men, or those who had suffered a long or wearing sickness. Of course they may go to hell, or they may go to any of these divisions in the spirit plane, but they won't remain long in the astral. Young children also are seldom long on the astral plane. They have not had time to take up much earth matter, so to speak. To continue, I spent what seemed like an endless age being hunted through these great forests. Sometimes I revisited earth, hoping, so to speak, to break the magic spell, but it was no good. Whenever I left the earth spot I had been haunting, back I was in that damned old forest. People often ask two questions: 1, why should ghosts come? 2, why don't our dear ones communicate with those they have left behind? Of course there are dozens of answers to both questions, but my experiences will supply at any rate one answer to each. We cling to our old surroundings because we are not yet sufficiently clear of the earth dross to leave the astral plane, and yet find that plane very unpleasant. Secondly, being thus like hunted beasts, we have no time for thinking of anyone but ourselves. Often when this stage is passed we have formed new interests and have new duties to perform, therefore do not trouble. You must remember that it is extremely hard to communicate from here to earth, and the more spiritual we are the harder it is. The simplest method is by a medium, and often then the messages we get through arrive warped and twisted. Often therefore we lose heart and give up the attempt. It is only when we get a good medium through whom our messages can reach Earth in the form in which they are dispatched that we think it worthwhile to continue to experiment. Well, again I have rather wondered. After some time I did get out of this forest, but only to find myself in a more modern type of forest. Here I underwent similar experiences with modern animals, lions and tigers, wolves, and so forth. Sometimes these animals would hunt deer and antelopes over hills and dales, but I could never discover that they caught anything. After a time I found, however, that there was a difference here. Whether it was that I had developed, or whether it was due to the fact that these creatures had learnt about man on earth and had come to fear him, I can't say. Probably it was due to both facts. But I discovered this. If I turned and faced my pursuer, and willed that he should fly from me, at the same time advancing towards him or them, sooner or later the creature would turn and fly. At first I only attempted it with solitary beasts, my first adventure being with a large lone wolf. Encouraged by my success I next tackled a lion, and finally succeeded in putting a whole pack of wolves to flight. Soon after this I was able to leave the forests and came into new surroundings. J. W. Did you not feel any of your old earth desires? The officer in his account speaks exclusively of them. W. A. Yes. During almost the whole time I was continually desiring to gratify the old lusts of the flesh. Many times when I was haunting the earth I found myself drifting towards places where these abounded. The whole time that cursed devil was urging me to gratify my desires by obsessing someone. Again and again I nearly gave way to the temptation, but each time I heard the warning voice of my guardian angel saying, "If you do that, you'll go to hell." It was not only that, however, but a feeling that the thing was in itself uncanny and loathsome which helped me to resist the temptation. After I had ceased to fear the wild beasts, these desires made a redoubled effort to capture me, but at the same time I found I had drawn a little nearer to my guide. Chapter 4, He determines to help men on Earth that he may escape from the astral plane. Slowly I began to long for some purpose in life. I seemed to be ever drifting about with no object in view. I don't know how long it was, as you reckon time, before this idea really took definite shape. To me it seemed after ages of suffering. At once there came an answer from my guide, who seemed at the same time to draw much nearer to me. Why not strive to approach nearer to God, to become more spiritual, and, in time, to leave the astral for the spiritual plane? I'd gladly do so if I could, I replied. How can I? By striving to help someone else. That is the amplest method for you. How can I help anyone here? I began. That is for you to discover, he answered sharply. This gave me at any rate an object in life, and I began to think how I could help someone. I am still fearfully ignorant as to the power possessed by spirits, and at that time I knew far less. My thought naturally drifted to M, and I soon concentrated my attention on trying to help her, and succeeded. I was fearfully pleased at this success, as I knew she would now have a good time on the whole. I then noticed that my guardian angel had drawn quite close to me, and the evil spirit had drifted farther away. You have made a good beginning, but of course this piece of work was easy, for you cared for this woman. Now you must help someone who is nothing to you. This was not so interesting nor so easy. It took me a long time to decide who I would try to help. At last the chance came, and with it the inspiration how to act. I was in Southampton. I often go there even still, when I saw a young fellow making up accounts in a large shop. Something drew me towards him, and I at once perceived that he was contemplating falsifying the accounts and pocketing the difference. Then the inspiration came. I exerted all my will, desiring that he should both see and hear me. Suddenly the young man started up and dropped his pen, which made a blot on the page. I knew he saw me, and raised my arm in a menacing attitude. After a moment's pause I spoke, or, rather, willed that he should hear these words, "Young man, stop before it is too late. I have come back from the grave to warn you. That way leads to disgrace and prison. Be warned in time." He shrieked, and fled cowering into a corner of the place, and began to blabber out that he'd never do it, he promised. Seeing my object was attained, and fearing the strain on my will was too great, I willed that I should become invisible, and of course vanished from his sight. I saw him stagger to the book and place it quietly on his desk. As he did so he murmured, "My God, my God." It was sent as a warning. What a fool I should have been. I left him, feeling convinced that I had been successful. I soon perceived my guide, now close beside me. "Well done," he said. "Your second task is accomplished. There still remains one more. You must now help someone you have cause to hate." I at once thought of D, who had tried to drag me down after death, but my guide said, "No, you cannot help her. You must try and help someone still alive." After a lot of thought I remember the fellow who had swindled me rather badly some time before I died. The details don't matter. I must admit I didn't much relish the job. Still, I determined to do the best I could. I found that one of his partners was intending to cut with a large sum of money, and the result for him would be financial ruin. How to help him was the difficulty. I tried to inspire him to look into certain matters which would have aroused his suspicions, but it was no go. He was so materialistic that I could not make the slightest impression. Then I tried to appear to him as a ghost, as in the former case, but it didn't come off this time. He was far too materialistic to be affected. Then I tried his wife, but with the same result. At length I hit on the only way. His partner drank. I found him sitting in his office sleeping off the effects of too much whiskey at lunch. My former enemy was seated in his office hard at work. They each had a separate office. I obtained control of the drunken man for a short time in a similar manner to the way in which I am able to write through you when in trance. Of course, as this was my first experience, and, further, he was not in trance but only sleeping in drink, my control was not very good. However, I made him write this, "Dear, this morning I determined to cut to South America with £5,000 in cash, which I drew at midday from our joint account. It practically emptied that account. At the last moment my better self prevailed. I therefore write this to you. I trust that you will not consider it necessary to prosecute, but of course I understand that we shall have to dissolve partnership. Yours, etc. Then I walked the man into his partner's office, made him hand him the letter, and then took him back safely to his chair and left him there still asleep. He was not left asleep long though, for my former enemy rushed into the office and woke him up. I need not tell you all that passed. Sufficient it is to say that the partner had to hand back the cash he had drawn out and dissolve partnership. My former foe did not prosecute, and the business was settled quietly and without anyone getting to know the ins and outs of the case. You have at length won your release, cried my guide, and as he spoke I saw the evil spirit who had haunted me for so long being rapidly whirled away by some unknown force. I will describe how I emerged onto the spirit plane at another time. He ceased, and H. J. L. took me out of the room. You must return now, he said, you have been here quite long enough. Next moment I was whirling through space, then oblivion. J. W. Chapter 5, Types of Beings Other Than Men. Animal Astrals, Fairies, Elementals. Letter at 109 Charing Cross Road. Saturday, April 18, 6:45 p.m. H. J. L. We shall not write long tonight, as conditions are not very good. W. A. We'll continue from the place he left off on Monday. W. A. My guide said to me, before you leave this plane it would be well for you to learn something about the various types of beings who inhabit it besides men. He pointed to a crowd of hideous beings who appeared to be hovering round a public house, together with a large number of earthbound men and women. Carefully distinguish between those astrals which are still tenanted by men and those which are merely empty shells. I then perceived that there were several kinds of astrals. Those still inhabited by human spirits seemed to have more life in them than the others. These let us call number one. Number two group were the empty astral shells from which the spirits had departed. Some seemed shadowy and faint, real ghosts, while others seemed almost as vital as the inhabited astrals. My guide explained, these are divisible into two groups, A, those astrals that make no effort to prolong their existence once the spirit has fled, and B, those that do. The latter suck up the magnetic fluid which is inherent in all living creatures, and in so doing drain it away from its rightful owners. They have no real intellects, such as evil men who obsess have, but have merely a kind of blind instinct akin to that of a plant. They are parasites, and fatten on the life of other creatures. How is it that some of these empty shells desire to prolong this existence while others do not? I asked. He replied, it is because they have been inhabited by gross and materialistic spirits, and often by spirits who have started the instinct by obsessing someone. You know that evil woman wished you to obsess that man. Had you done so, in time you would have endeavored not merely to obtain a temporary strengthening of your astral body, which would enable you to enjoy again the lusts of the flesh, but also you would have begun to desire to prolong your existence in this plane, fearing to fall into hell. For a time you would have been able to delay that result by sucking up the magnetic fluid from some weak mortal. In the end you would have been driven from your astral body, and your spirit sunk to hell. But your astral, having acquired the habit, would continue to hang on to some poor wretch like a leech, and by so doing might have been able to hang about the earth for an indefinite time, possibly hundreds of years. Thus obsessing not only hurls the soul to hell, but, as it were, creates a ghoul which can continue to afflict the living. Thus I learned that there were at least three definite types of astrals proper: 1, those still occupied by the soul; 2, those which were real ghosts, and tended rapidly to disintegrate; 3, those which have lost the soul, but yet retain a separate existence by sucking up the vital elements of living mortals. Are there any other inhabitants of these realms? I inquired. Many others, my guide replied, but let me first say that animal astrals leave empty shells, and even occasionally these shells may be seized on by evil men who have lost their own astral forms, and wish temporarily to possess one. Such spirits may, further, endeavor to retain possession and renew their vitality, as in the case of their old astral bodies. This they can seldom do for long, and usually destroy the astral in their endeavors, but occasionally they succeed in starting the vampire habit, and then lose control of the body. The result is that the animal astral, having obtained the vampire instinct, may continue it. Such cases are rare, however, and evil spirits more usually seize the astral shell of some elemental, for they can more easily mold it to their own original shape. The second group are elementals. Now those you saw just now by that low-drinking den are one of the most numerous types. These are formed by the elements of a low and bestial nature thrown off by vicious men, and they therefore take these loathsome shapes. They can obtain a kind of half-existence by hanging round the spots on earth where this type of lust is indulged in. By so doing they don't get direct satisfaction from the drunkard, but they do get some materialistic elements which enable them to keep in existence. They have no separate souls, or even intellects. I asked, how is it then that they take any forms at all? He. Elements of the same type attract each other, and the actual form they take is due to the influence of astral currents which flow through this plane in a manner analogous to the currents of the sea. Just as a mass of sawdust thrown into water tends to drift into various rough shapes and forms, so do these. Similarly, these forms are usually short-lived and fleeting. Now look at that group. Why? I cried, bless my soul. There are fairies then, for these elementals look like fairies of one's childhood. Yes, there are fairies, and some more substantial than these. As he spoke I noticed that they had broken up and vanished. What are they? I cried. Apostrophe, these are elemental astral atoms thrown off by young children. They naturally drift into these pretty, harmless shapes, influenced to do so by the thoughts and dreams of children. There are fairies of a more real type to which I will return later. There are whole hosts of elementals who are thrown off by men of low spiritual development, savages, and so forth. These are quite distinct from the elementals formed out of the astral elements thrown off by evil men. They include many of the satyrs and wood nymphs of ancient folk tales, but not all. Then I saw the pub again, and, besides the crowd of elementals, astrals, and so forth, I was aware of an awful being who seemed to be ruler and master of them all. What is that awful brute? I cried. That, my guide answered, is a vice personified. Such beings are created by the devotion to any particular lust by all men so afflicted. This drink fiend is something far more real than any ordinary elemental. He is the embodiment not of one man's evil, but of the evil thoughts of thousands. He is not really of this plane, as of the elementals and astral shells, but of hell itself. He is the embodiment of an idea. In your next stage of development you will see many such ideas, but, fortunately, they will mostly be good ones. This being belongs properly to hell, but comes hither to urge on these sots to more evil. He is, as it were, one of the connecting links between the astral plane and hell, just as I am one of the connecting links with the realms of progress. Now besides these elementals there exist a number of spirits who never inhabited a physical body, and yet are real spirits, with intellects of their own. Some of these occupy astral bodies, others do not, and I will deal with them later. But I, W. A. Ed, think we have done enough for tonight. Now goodbye. W. A. Transvision, etc. at 109 Charing Cross Road. Monday, April 20, 1914. W. A. S. Narrative. My guide further told me concerning the spirits who have astral bodies but have never possessed real physical bodies, as follows: these beings may be good or bad or mixed, just as man is mixed. The latter are the largest group, and they are open to the same temptation that besets men here, that is, to try by obsessing to obtain something akin to a physical body. If they do so, they sooner or later suffer the fate that befalls men who obsess. They are thrown out of their astral bodies and fall into hell. They are therefore those who never were men, and yet are in hell. So, too, astrals may progress to the spiritual plane. This is most frequently done by their striving to help mortals on earth, but there are other methods. To this group of beings belong most of the so-called fairies who are seen still by a few, and at one time, when men were nearer to the next world, we're often seen on earth. These beings, since they, like men, are often of a mixed disposition, are liable to do foolish or even wicked acts, as well as good and kind ones. Their most noticeable characteristic is irresponsibility, and often indeed mischievousness. They know little of pain and sorrow, and therefore are less serious than men. This is a great hindrance to any progress on their part, but, contrarywise, they are less likely to become tainted with the more deadly spiritual sins, such as cruelty and hate. I do not propose to deal any further with these astral creatures, as it would not help your spiritual progress, but it is well that you should realize that man is not the only creature in the astral plane, much less on the spiritual. Man is so egotistical that he is forever imagining that he is the only being who matters. When on earth, he often considers the animals are of no importance. Even when not a materialist, he abrogates to himself the sole possession of a soul, and considers he alone has any possibility of a future life. In like manner he, knowing nothing about the subject, often declares that there are no spirits in the land beyond the grave except men. Even when dead, he often does not realize that there are countless other orders of beings under God's gracious protection besides men. Like attracts like, and it is often the case that a man meets few other beings save men, or, if he does, he fails to see that they were not men once. He sees exalted spirits who were men, and jumps to the conclusion that all exalted spirits were men. He learns that he has an astral body, and at once assumes that every inhabited astral must necessarily possess a human spirit. Further, it must be remembered that for the most part it is easier for the spirits who have been men to help or hinder men, for they know far better the trials and difficulties that beset men. Finally, it is by no means easy to tell what type of spirit one is dealing with, even when one knows that there are many orders of creation. This is especially the case in the lower planes of existence, and it is from these for the most part that Earth derives what little information it does possess of the next world. "Were you a man?" I inquired. "I was," he replied, "and so are most guardian angels, but not all. But enough of these matters. Only beware of jumping to hasty conclusions, especially on negative evidence. Now it is time for you to leave the astral plane. Kneel and pray." Chapter 6, He Leaves the Astral for the Spirit Plane. I did so, and repeated the Lord's Prayer. As I did this, a great weight seemed to crush me down. My surroundings began to blur and quiver. The astral landscape became like a painted canvas, and then this grew thin. It split and rent in a thousand fragments, and dissolved into tatters of mist. These seemed to be whirled away as if by a strong wind, but I felt no breeze. The weight grew more and more heavy. I seemed to be enclosed in a coffin of lead. At length I could bear it no longer, and shrieked to my guide, "Help me, for God's sake, to get clear of this weight." He held out his hand to me, and I sprang towards it, and, to my astonishment, found myself free of the weight. Then my astral shell was caught by the same wind which was shattering the landscape. It whirled and twisted and grew flimsy. Then it whirled out of sight. The mists drifted quickly away and I saw a beautiful landscape, the type of landscape familiar to you by now. I had reached the plane of the spiritual body. I had hardly time to realize it before, on every side, visions of my former life came crowding upon me in a wild chaos, like a hideous nightmare from which I could not escape. I could not see my guide, and called desperately to him, and a voice answered, "Pray." Then I prayed, and as I did so the visions ceased to be chaos, and took on a regular sequence. From my earliest childhood up to the hour of my death, every act and thought were shown as a little drama enacted again and again. Not only the evil, but also the good. Here H. J. L. intervened. The rest was practically the same as my own experience, so we won't go over it again. A. Just tell Jack about your spiritual body. He smiled a little sheepishly. My present body looks like that of a fairly young boy. But then it was as small as 1 of 8. I suppose I'm now in size equal to a boy of 12 or 13. J. W. Yes, not more than 13. W. A. Well, when I discovered this, I asked my guide, who was leading me to the school to which Mr. L.